It's good to see you all out this morning. You may have noticed that my family has abandoned me. So thank you for being here. I appreciate your attendance here this morning. And it's good to be here to worship our Father in heaven. When you think of the phrase carpe diem, what comes to mind? Do you think about maybe a movie that was a long time ago, 1989? There was a movie called Dead Poets Society. There was an actor named Robin Williams who played the role of an English professor who inspires his students with a motivational speech on the topic of carpe diem. The idea, this is a Latin phrase, and the idea, it conveys the message to seize the day. It's the motivating thought that while we can't change the past or be certain of the future, we do have the present time and we need to use it wisely. I'll look at a few quotes about time and opportunity. The first one here, you'll never find time for anything. If you want time, you must make it. Is that true? Do you think about that? That you're always looking, maybe there's a better time to do something. You're going to do something in the future, and many times it just doesn't happen. The better time does not come around. Or maybe this next quote, Benjamin Franklin said, "Lost time is never found again." You know, that moment that you had, that opportunity that comes your way, it may not ever come again. And then this last one, making the most of each moment and ridding ourselves of the toxic habit of constantly looking forward to the next thing. Be where your feet are. You know, I thought about this and it doesn't say be where your phone is, does it? It says be where your feet are. Live in the here and now. You know, we're here Sunday morning in this building. This is where we're at. This is where our feet are. We need to think about that. Well, this morning, I would like to look at an important story in the Bible where the idea of carpe diem and seizing the moment, taking advantage of the time that we have, is one of the main points. If you would, go ahead and turn over to the book of Esther. Turn over to the book of Esther, and we will look at this book this morning. We're going to read through quite a bit of the book and look at the story, kind of refresh our minds on this story, and think about some lessons that we can take from this as we read through it. You know, one interesting point is teachers that teach on the book of Esther will point out that God is not specifically mentioned in this book anywhere. So be thinking about that as we read through, thinking about how God is involved in this story. A theme of the book of Esther, one of the themes that we could think about, is God will protect his people. Is a good message to think about in this book, that God will protect his people, and we are his people. God will protect us. Well, the setting of the book is in a Jewish community living in Susa, the capital of the Persian Empire. So this is in captivity, 486 to 465. Some of the characters here in this story, King Ahasuerus, Haman, the chief leader, Mordecai, and his younger cousin Esther, to kind of refresh your memory of some of the characters here in this book. And to open the story, we see that the king of Persia is throwing a large feast. Let's look at verses 1 through 4. Now, in the days of Ahasuerus, the Ahasuerus who reigned from India to Ethiopia over 127 provinces, in those days when King Ahasuerus sat on his royal throne in Susa, the citadel, in the third year of his reign, he gave a feast for all his officials and servants. The army of Persia and Media and the nobles and governors of the provinces were before him while he showed the riches of his royal glory and the splendor and pomp of his greatness for many days. 180 days. Can you imagine this? The pomp, the riches, the extravagance, this celebration, the duration, 180 days. It's hard to imagine this type of feast. So that's the setting here. That's the beginning of this story. Well, now let's get introduced to another character here, Queen Vashti. In verse 10 and 11, it says, on the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, he commanded the seven eunuchs who are served in the presence of King Ahasuerus to bring Queen Vashti before the king with her royal crown in order to show the peoples and the princes her beauty, for she was lovely to look at. But Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's command delivered by the eunuchs. At this, the king became enraged and his anger burned within him. Can you imagine this situation? And Queen Vashti, she understood what was going on. She did not want to take any part in this. This was humiliating to her. This was not something that she wanted to be a part of. It was demeaning. And it shows a little bit about her character, I believe, in this. Well, there were consequences. Queen Vashti is banished, and a search for a new queen is launched. This shows the power that the king has. It also shows his rash decision-making, the peer pressure. He was embarrassed. He was going to take action. This will be important later as we think about decisions that he may make. So the king now had no queen. So they talked amongst themselves. They decided to conduct issued an edict to round up all the young women, some sort of a contest, it kind of sounds like, but anyway, rounding up these women to see who was the most beautiful, who would please the king the most, and that would be the person that would become the new queen. In verse 2 of chapter 2, it says, "Then the king's young men who attended him said, 'Let the beautiful young virgins be sought out for the king. Let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom to gather all the beautiful young virgins to the harem in Susa, the citadel, under the custody of Haggai, the king's eunuch, who is in charge of the women. Let their cosmetics be given to them, and let the young woman who pleases the king, the young woman who pleases the king, be queen instead of Vashti.' This pleased the king, and he did so." Now we're introduced next to Mordecai and Esther here in verse 5. It says, "Now there was a Jew in Susa, the citadel, who was named Mordecai, the son of Jair, son of Shimeah, son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem among the captives, carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had carried away. He was bringing up Hadassah, that is Esther, the daughter of his uncle, for she had neither father nor mother. The young woman had a beautiful figure and was lovely to look at. And when her father and her mother died, Mordecai took her in as his own daughter." We can see the relationship between Mordecai and Esther being established here. She would have been much younger than he was, and he took on this father relationship with Esther. Well, at the conclusion of the search, they got this big search going on and rounded up all these young ladies. And the conclusion of the search was that Esther was found in favor with the king and was appointed queen. In verse 16, it says, "And when Esther was taken to King Ahasuerus into his royal palace in the 10th month, which is the 10th month of Tebeth in the 7th year of his reign, the king loved Esther more than all the women. And she won grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti." Can you imagine all the things that were going on in Esther's life? You know, a year ago, where was she at? She was being raised by her uncle. She didn't have a traditional family, if you will, at this point. And now, a year later, that's how long this situation took. A year later, and now she's the queen. Can you imagine all of the things that she went through, all the new experiences and everything that would have transpired in that year? Let's transition now to Haman. At this point, Haman has become very powerful in the kingdom. Even to the point when he passes by, everyone bows down. He was promoted. If you read through that scripture there, he was promoted. He was very powerful. People were bowing down to pay homage to Haman. But there was one who was not bowing down, and that was Mordecai. And it came to Haman's attention that Mordecai was not bowing down. Let's look at verse 5 and 6 of chapter 3. It says, "And when Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow down or pay homage to him, Haman was filled with fury. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone. So as they made known to him the people of Mordecai, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews, the people of Mordecai, throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus. Haman devised a plan here, a pretty ingenious, skillful. This is much bigger than just Mordecai. He's going to get at Mordecai in a very large, grand way. He said, I will get back at him with a decree to wipe out his people, the Jews, across the whole kingdom. Haman talks to the king and shares the scheme with him. In verses 8 through 11, it says, then Haman said to King Ahasuerus, there's a certain people scattered abroad, dispersed among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from those of every other people, and they do not keep the king's laws, so that it is not to be the king's profit to tolerate them. If it please the king, let it be decreed that they be destroyed. And I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who have charge of the king's business, that they may put it into the king's treasury. So the king took his signet ring from his hand and gave it to Haman the Agagite, the son of Hammedatha, the enemy of the Jews. And the king said to Haman, the money is given to you, the people also, to do with them as it seems good. So now this plan that Haman has concocted has been shared with the king. The king is on board. Now the plan is going to be communicated throughout the land. In verse 13, it says, letters were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces with instructions to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all the Jews, young and old, women and children, in one day, the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, and to plunder their goods. A copy of the document was to be issued as a decree in every province by proclamation to all the peoples to be ready for that day. The couriers went out hurriedly by the order of the king, and the decree was issued in Susa, the citadel, and the king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Susa was thrown into confusion. Can you imagine this edict, this decree out of nowhere? I'm sure people thought, where did this come from? Throwing the city into confusion, and all the while everyone is confused and not knowing what to do in this uproar. We see Haman and the king sitting down to drink, relaxing. Haman probably with a big smile on his face. Well, Mordecai gets the news. He understands what this means. Mordecai is devastated. He is in mourning. All the provinces are in mourning. In chapter 4, when Mordecai learned all that had been done, Mordecai tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and ashes and went out into the city, into the midst of the city, and he cried out with a loud and bitter cry. He went up to the entrance of the king's gate, for no one was allowed to enter the king's gate clothed in sackcloth. And in every province, wherever the king's command and his decree reached, there was a great mourning from the Jews, with fasting and weeping and lamenting. Many of them lay in sackcloth and ashes. A devastating message. Think about if you were one of the Jews and you hear this and you're asking, is this really what this means? Could this really be true? And then every reply back is, yes, this is true. This is the king's decree. This is legitimate. The mourning that was going on, fasting and weeping, lamenting. Well, Esther was in the palace and she may somewhat be buffered by some of this news. It seems like she's kind of getting this in different bits and pieces. In chapter 4 and 5, we see that she's concerned. It says, when Esther's young women and her eunuchs came and told her, the queen was deeply distressed. She sent garments to clothe Mordecai so that he might take off his sackcloth, but he would not accept them. She'd heard about Mordecai and sackcloth and ashes, and she's very concerned about this. And then in verse 5, it says, then Esther called for Hathach and one of the king's eunuchs, who had been appointed to attend her, and ordered him to go to Mordecai to learn what this was and why it was. She wanted more information. Why was this so devastating? Mordecai instructs Hathach about the situation. Here in verses 6 through 8, it says, Hathach went out to Mordecai into the open square of the city in the front of the king's gate, and Mordecai told him all that had happened to him and the exact sum of money that Haman had promised to pay into the king's treasuries for the destruction of the Jews. Mordecai also gave him a copy of the written decree issued in Susa for their destruction, that he might show it to Esther and explain it to her and command her to go to the king to beg for his favor and plead with him on behalf of her people. It even says here, as Mordecai is explaining it, that he has the paper. He says, see for yourself. This is actually what it says. This is legitimate. And then Mordecai makes a big ask here of Esther. Have you ever had a situation where you had a big ask to make? Maybe there was some nerves. You didn't know if you could really ask this. I think back to I had a big ask one time to the tents for Shannon's hand in marriage. I still remember that. I remember the room we were in. I remember every bit of that. That was a big ask that I made years and years ago. You may have things that are difficult to ask people. There may be some things that, something that you need to ask somebody that you're concerned about. It may be a big ask. We see that here, that Mordecai asked Esther something big. Mordecai asked Esther to talk to the king about the situation. Remember, Mordecai is like a father to Esther. She views him in that way. She's going to obey what he says. She's going to do what he says, almost in every situation. But here, Esther questions the request. In verse 11, it says, all the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that if any man or woman goes to the king inside the inner court without being called, there is but one law to be put to death, except the one to whom the king holds out the golden scepter so that he may live. But as for me, I have not been called to come into the king these 30 days. You know, Esther, I think, is saying, Mordecai, seriously, you don't really understand what you're asking right now. Remember Vashti? Remember how she was banished? You know full well I cannot do this. Not only that, I'm not in favor right now. I haven't been able to see the king for 30 days. I will die if I do this. This is life and death, Mordecai. And she says, send this message back to Mordecai. And Mordecai replies here in verse 13 and 14. Then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, do not think yourself that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silent at this time, relief and deliverance will rise from the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such a time as this? You know, Mordecai could have replied maybe back to Esther and said, okay, I understand. That's a good, you're making a good point. I agree, this is really dangerous. But Mordecai knew the stakes, and he does not agree with her reasoning. And he makes a few points here. He says, first of all, that Esther, your life will not necessarily be saved here. You are a Jew. You mentioned Vashti before in this discussion, and Mordecai is thinking about Vashti. Remember, Vashti, that's the person that was banished. This is the king. He will do what he says. He'll do whatever he wants to do. He has rash judgment at times. You know, a lesson here to me, if we think about this, is not to get comfortable with our situation. You know, Esther could look at, she's been through this year or so here that she's been the queen, and things are going pretty well, right? She has so many wonderful things. She has influence. She has means. She's important. She's got a really good thing going. Why would she want to risk that? Why would she want to rock the boat here? Sometimes in our life, things are going pretty smooth. You had some of those times. Things seem to be going pretty well. Job's going okay. Family's going well. Marriage is going well. Health is going pretty good. And then maybe there's something that we need to do, and we don't kind of want to rock the boat. We don't want to change. There's something on our mind. We know we need to take action, but things are still going so good that we're reluctant at times to change. I think it's a good lesson for us to think about. Even when life is going well, when things are good, we need to have the courage to take a step, to ask somebody a question, to take action. We must be careful about being too content, that we won't take action when it's needed. Another point he made was that relief and deliverance will come from another place if you do not do this. It's interesting. Why does Mordecai think this? Mordecai has faith and trust that God will carry out his plan. You know, we talked about God not being mentioned specifically in this book, but we can see situations like this. Mordecai knows that God is going to take care of his people. He is going to protect his people. He will deliver. Mordecai has the faith here. He shows that God will carry out his plan. God has promised that through the Jewish people, a Messiah would come. God will carry out that plan. How could he view things this way? The current situation was pretty bleak. How could Mordecai think that God would carry out his plan in the current situation with everything so bleak? How did Mordecai have this confidence? Well, had God done this before? Is there anything in Jewish history that God has carried out his plan even when things look bleak? Abraham and Sarah having a baby? There's no way they could have a baby at their age. There's no way that could happen. Things look bleak, but God can carry out that plan. What about Joseph in the pit? Joseph in prison, bleak situations. God will carry out his plan. David and Goliath. David, there's no way he could beat the giant Goliath. Things look bleak. Rahab, in her lowly status, how could she ever have an impact? What a bleak situation. How could she be someone that could have an impact? How could God work through her? What about Paul becoming a leader for Christ? In Acts 9, in verse 1, it says, But Saul, still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord, went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogues of Damascus, so that if found any belonging to the way, men or women, he might bring them to Jerusalem. This is the person that Saul was. But then in verse 13 of chapter 9 in Acts, it says, But Ananias answered, Lord, I have heard from many about this man, how much evil he has done to your saints at Jerusalem. And here he has authority from the chief priest to bind all who call on your name. But the Lord said to him, Go, for he is a chosen instrument of mine to carry out my name before the Gentiles and the kings and the children of Israel. For I will show him how much he must suffer for my sake. Do we find ourselves in situations that we think are bleak? Do you feel that way right now? Are you in a situation that you feel is bleak, that there's no way through? God has a way through. God can bring us through any type of situation. Maybe there's a family situation that seems impossible to overcome. Maybe you're in a marriage that is contentious and seems difficult, and it's a struggle at times. A health issue. Maybe one of those health issues, you go to bed with the health issue, you wake up in the morning and it's still there. It's just this constant health issue that you're struggling with every day, over and over. Maybe there's a cycle of sin that you're caught up in. You can't seem to get out of it. You're trying to get out of it. Somehow you seem to be caught up in this. You can't seem to stop. You feel like your situation is bleak. You don't know how you can get out of this. There's many situations we can find ourselves in that look very bleak. We can take from this story that no matter how bleak, God will protect us. God will deliver us. We can lean on God. He is more powerful. Mordecai showed the faith that even when it's at its bleakest, God is stronger. Is not God greater than what we can see and experience? In Isaiah 55, verse 8 and 9, For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. God is strong enough. God is wise enough. God is faithful. Even though Mordecai was sure that the deliverance would come, regardless of whether Esther acted or not, he did not say, You're off the hook, Esther. So he was convinced that God would deliver one way or the other. But he didn't say, You're off the hook to Esther. He said, You're not here by accident. He said, It's your time to be an instrument for God. This is your chance. Again, let's think about Esther's life. She may have said, But I'm limited. What can I do? I started out with no parents. I was an orphan. I have no power. I went through this edict, this contest. I did become queen. I have a position of influence. But does you think she's still on the fence? Sometimes she still views herself as that orphan with no power. Back and forth, she's the queen, but is she the queen? How does she view herself? Maybe she's waffling in thought about who she is and what she can really do. Your whole life may have led to this point, Mordecai points out. Who knows? Who knows the outcome? But what we do know is you have a chance right now. It's your time. You have it in your grasp. Well, what about us? Does this ring a bell for any of us? Do we have limitations that we feel like are in the way and that's why we can't act? Those are the reasons that we use. Maybe it's that we can't speak well enough. Maybe it's I'm not part of the elite. I don't have any power. I'm not physically able. I'm in prison. I'm too young. Or I'm too old. I'm too poor. I'm too rich. We have all these examples and many more. Maybe we find ourselves using these limitations. We're on that fence. We know we need to do something, but we keep going back to the limitations of why we can't. We keep thinking about why we can't do this, why we're not going to take this step. Back and forth we go. So what did Esther do? Let's look at verse 16 of chapter 4. It says, "Go gather all the Jews to be found in Susa and hold a fast on my behalf and do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my young women will also fast as you do. Then I will go to the king, though it is against the law, and if I perish, I perish." What an amazing display of courage. She was the queen. Why should she risk anything here? Why rock the boat? Because it was the right thing to do. Well, how did the king respond? Here in verse 2, chapter 5, "And when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court, she won favor in his sight, and he held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. Then Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter." Can you imagine the relief that she had at that point? But it's not over yet. So the king allowed Esther to throw a feast. She asked if she could throw a feast with the king there and Haman in attendance. And in chapter 7 it says, "So the king and Haman went into the feast with Queen Esther. And on the second day as they were drinking wine after the feast, the king said to Esther, 'What is your wish, Queen Esther? It shall be granted to you. What is your request? Even to half of my kingdom it shall be fulfilled.' Then Queen Esther answered, 'If I have found favor in your sight, O king, if it please the king, let my life be granted me for a wish. For my wish, and my people for my request. For we have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be killed, to be annihilated. If we've been sold merely as slaves, men and women, I would have been silent. For our affliction is not to be compared with the loss to the king.' Then King Ahasuerus said to the queen Esther, 'Who is he? And where is he? Who has dared to do this?' And Esther said, 'A foe and enemy, this wicked Haman.' Then Haman was terrified before the king and the queen." Can you imagine being Haman at this point? Would you have loved to be in that room to observe this situation, this conversation? I wonder how loud Esther's voice was raised. You can feel the emotion she must have had in building up. Deliverance came to Israel from the unlikely source of Esther. Deliverance for God's people will always be there. God is in control and is working in our lives today. Esther, like Mordecai, had a big ask that she was scared. She didn't think she could do it. She waffled on her thought about whether she could or whether she couldn't. And she came to the king and she made that ask. Where does our deliverance come from today? Our deliverance from sin. For us, deliverance has ultimately come from Jesus himself. Esther had to rise in the ranks to help. Jesus had to lower himself to the form of man to help. He willingly walked into the opportunity of death like a lamb to the slaughter. Will we look to the example of Esther and ultimately Jesus and embrace the opportunities that are before us? A couple of lessons from Esther as we close here. God is capable and faithful to carry out his plan. We can have confidence in that. We also see the courage of a Christian is a powerful weapon in the battle. We have a wonderful example of a young lady who seized the day. She took the opportunity that was before her. An opportunity that was risky, dangerous, uncertain. She assessed the situation and said ultimately that God is in control and whatever happens is up to Him, even if it means her own death. What amazing courage from this young lady. Time waits for no one. That's an old proverb paraphrased. The opportunities of life will pass us by if we delay, if we procrastinate in taking advantage of them. Is there anything that's on your mind this morning that you need to take care of? Is there something you need to take care of? Maybe right now there's something you need to take care of. Maybe there's something you need to take care of as soon as we leave this building, this afternoon. Anything that you need to say maybe to someone, maybe if there's a big ask, maybe it's going to be awkward, maybe it's going to be risky. Have you always thought that you could not take action because you're limited in some way? You're using and leaning on some sort of an excuse? Are there changes you need to make in your life while you still have time to do so? Like Esther, we have the opportunity and the obligation to act for good, to redeem the time, to act for our Father. Let's seize the day while it is still called today. If there are any here that need to be baptized, if there are any here who would like the request of the prayers of the group here, now is a great time to come forward as we stand and sing.